Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
So, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I apologize for wearing this much too bright rock suit. It was given to me as a present by a friend, and I figured that the day I give a talk is the one chance I may ever have to wear it. So, excuse me, should we wear subdued colors in the Zendo? I think the title of my talk is something like Training in the Way of Tea and Training in the Way of Zen. And maybe the first thing to establish is that there is some similarity between them, and certainly anybody in Japan would know that there is. The founder of modern tea ceremony, modern in this case meaning dating back to the 16th century, is a man named Senno Rikyu, who in fact trained in Zen. And I think we're up to maybe the 16th or 17th generation of his successors in several different houses of tea. And each of the successors has had to go into a Zen monastery in Daitokuji for a couple of months to train before they can assume this role. In fact, in most temples, there is a tea house where tea is practiced, if not by the monks who live there, then at least by the guests who come there. And in fact, if you go to a temple and you get to meet the abbot, probably he will prepare you a bowl of whisked green tea. The conclusive evidence that tea and Zen are closely related is there's a calendar whose title is Tea and Zen Are One Essence. Very popular calendar with calligraphy by Roshis on it. So clearly there's a relationship. There's several ways I could give this talk. I could give you a 500-year history of tea. I could tell you about the wabi aesthetic, a very focusing on simplicity of Senno Rikyu and how that was influenced by Zen. But rather than giving you an academic talk, I thought I would try and give you some feeling for tea by telling you about a tea ceremony. Now, I really had great trepidation about doing this because clearly I'm going to tell you nice things about this and you're all going to want us to think, oh, I wish I could go to a tea ceremony, and I'm going to feel very guilty because you can. But thanks to Connie Conway, who's sitting over here, you can. She's invited anybody from the Puget Sound Zen Center who would like to attend a tea ceremony at the Judd Creek Ranch Gallery to join her. And do you have something people can give you their email address on?
I left a sign-up sheet, so we're as part of our current show, which is about tea ceremony implements, we're doing it on Sundays at 3 through September 16th, but if anyone's interested in doing it at a different time, you can sign up and just leave your contact information and I'll get in touch with you and we'll arrange something. We have we have a table, so you can do it a sitting style. Tea as opposed to sitting
saison. Thank you very much, Connie, making my talk possible. So, first of all, one should say that there are really two kinds of tea ceremony. One is called a chaji, which means tea thing in Japanese, and it lasts for about 4 hours. And especially if you're sitting in saison, you know it lasts 4 hours. Begins with the laying of the fire and continues on to a 10-course meal. Beautiful, beautiful kaiseki meal. Then sweets are served. Everybody goes out into the tea garden, comes back, and one is served thick tea. And thick tea really is the consistency of pea soup. It is really, really thick. It involves a lot of tea and just a little water. And everybody drinks from a communal bowl. So you drink three sips, and then you wipe the lip of the bowl where you've drunk, and then you pass it on to the next guest. So there's a real closeness established between the guests with this kind of communal drinking. I'm sorry, but Connie is not going to invite you to a chaji. She's going to invite you to a chakai, which is actually the last act of a chaji, which is about an hour long, and involves each of the guests getting his or her own bowl of tea and some sweets, more sweets, and it's a much more lighthearted event than the chaji part of the tea ceremony. So you have, I will tell you a little bit about what goes into creating a chaji. So if you want to give a chaji, the first thing you do is you have to think about who you want to invite. And that's just like a dinner party, right? You know, who's going to get along with who? Who do I want to have in my house? But there's a major exception in tea, and that is that there is somebody who has to be the head guest. And the head guest is going to ask questions on behalf of all the other guests. None of the other guests is going to ask the host anything, just the head guest. So you need somebody who not only knows something about tea, but also who will appreciate all the efforts that you have made to make this a special tea ceremony. So that's a very, very important choice you make. The next choice is, what are you going to use for tea ceremony implements? For maybe the most important implement, or it's called dogu in Japanese, is the scroll that you're going to hang in the tokonomo, which is a very special alcove. And so tea highlights what the season of the year is. And so you would choose something, that a scroll, if you have one, that has a seasonal content. So, for instance, now is season of the moon, right? Moon is visible sometimes. We got rained out last Sunday when we went to do moon viewing. So you might choose something, a scroll that has something about the moon on it. So, for instance, it might say, even behind the clouds, the moon shines, which is not only seasonal, but also has a deeper meaning in that the full moon is a symbol for awakening, for Buddha mind. And so what the scroll really is saying is, even though our minds are clouded with delusion, still our Buddha minds shine through, are shining behind it. So this is one of the wonderful things about tea, is that things have depth. It isn't just the season, it's also the deeper meaning. You also choose bowls to use. So in the summer, or let's start in the winter, you want a bowl with high sides to hold the heat of the tea in. In the summer, you want just the opposite. You want to release the heat of the tea. And so you use a very flat bowl. One also thinks about what kinds of flowers one's going to use. The flowers in the tea ceremony are not flowers the same as flowers in Ikebana. You try and find wild flowers if you can, and maybe just one or two, and perhaps a branch with a few leaves, and a piece of grass, or maybe a weed. So it's very unpretentious flower arrangement. And then you have to think about what kind of container am I going to use. And again, it's seasonal. So if I asked you, do you think a flower basket is winter or summer, you would say it's big flower basket. Come on, Dasa. Summer, yeah. So you wouldn't use a flower basket in the middle of winter. That's right. Yeah. So these are all choices that the host makes. And finally, as the day of the tea ceremony draws near, the host spends the day cleaning the tea room, cleaning in places you would never think to look. The idea is that if the tea room is really clean, the guests might not know how clean it is, but they will feel it somehow. They will feel the purity of the tea room. And purity is a major theme in tea ceremony. The garden is also cleaned and raked. The fire, if you're using a charcoal fire, the charcoal sits on ash. The ash is actually carved into a beautiful pattern. So lots of work, and there's more work on the day of the tea ceremony. The host usually wakes up early. He has gone out and bought tea sweets, or he has made tea sweets to accompany the tea the day before, and these are laid out. The bowls that he's going to use are laid out. What else? Finally, the path to the tea house is sprinkled with water. So not only the plants get a little bit of water so that they look as though they're dew-kissed, but also the stepping stones that the guests will walk on. And in fact, this is called the dewy path. And as guests walk the dewy path to the tea house, or to the waiting room for the tea house, they really try to empty their minds. The best description of the tea ceremony is four characters in Japanese. It's Ichigo Ichie, which literally translated means one meeting, one time. A much more meaningful translation in English would be one opportunity, never again. So you have one opportunity to attend this tea ceremony. Even if you attend one next week in the same tea house, it will be different. The weather will be different. The time of the year will be different. The host will be maybe in a better mood. Who knows? But it will be different. And so the guests really strive to empty their minds, forget about all their concerns and worries, and concentrate on what's going on in the tea house. So they wait in a little, it's almost like a shed, with some benches built in or a seat built into the back wall, and they sit really quietly. Guests don't talk during this time. They're really preparing themselves to go in. And because their minds are empty, they start to hear what's been around them all this time. They might hear the gurgling of a stream, or they might hear a crying of a bird. And somehow these sounds deepen the inner silence that the guests are beginning to experience. The host may serve them a very simple beverage before they go into the tea house, and sometimes it's just plain water. But if it's water, it's really special water that's come from a well where the water is supposed to be really delicious. And in fact, the helper who serves the guests the beverage may say, well, you know, I shouldn't tell you this, but in fact, the host drove up into the Cascade Mountains yesterday and found this really clear stream he knows about. So the guests really begin to feel, you know, the host is doing very special things for them. So finally the host appears, he bows to the guests all stand and they bow to the host, and then the host disappears, and one by one the guests make their way to the tea house. And the head guest excuses himself for going before everybody else. So tea is extraordinarily polite and considerate. So anytime you do anything, if you're the head guest, you say, Osaki ni, excuse me for going before you. When on the way to between the waiting shed and the tea house, there is a stone basin, and the head guest and all the guests, in fact, stop there and they purify themselves. So they take the wooden ladle that's there and they scoop water and they pour it in their left hand. They change the ladle, pour it in their right hand, change back to the left, wash their mouth out, lift the ladle so the water runs down the handle of the ladle and purifies it for the next guest. Guests are really considerate. Also, you can kind of sense from what I was doing that there's a kind of rhythm you get into that really is, again, involves you deeply in what you're experiencing or what you're, the emptiness of your own mind, if you'd like. So, entering the tea house. How do you go in? You crawl in. The entrance is called the Nijiriguchi. It's about that high, and you can't walk in. You have to crawl in on your hands and knees. And Sendo Rikyu did this on purpose. He lived in a feudal time when nobility and merchants, he was from the merchant class, did not really associate with each other except at tea ceremonies. And by everybody having to crawl in, including the shogun, shoguns like to attend tea ceremonies, even the shogun would have to crawl in, everybody was equal. So the head guest goes to the Tokonoma where the scroll is held. He looks at it. He bows. He's bowing not to the scroll, but to the spirit of the person who wrote the scroll. And then he looks at the flowers. He looks at the incense container. The air in the tea ceremony in the tea room is perfumed with incense that the host has put in to the fire. And the head guest looks at the fire and then goes to his place. And everyone does the same thing. And the last guest is the next most important guest to the head guest, because the last guest now has a very, very important job. He has to close the door of the Nijiriguchi. And he has to close it loudly enough so the host hears it, and the host knows that the last guest has entered, so that the host knows when to come into the tea room again. And closing the door of the Nijiriguchi is like playing the Inhin bell. You can hit it too hard, you can hit it too soft, and the host won't hear it. Or you can hit it too hard, and the atmosphere of the tea room is really disturbed. So there's an art to doing something as simple as closing the door. So the host enters, he bows to the guest bows to the host, and the host starts by saying the same thing every time. Thank you all for taking time from your very busy schedules to come to this tea gathering. And the head guest says the same thing every time. Thank you so much for inviting us and putting in all this work into preparation. I know it requires a lot of work. So they both bow to each other again. All the guests bow and the host leaves. And then he begins to bring in all the implements for the tea ceremony. A cold water jar, tea bowl, tea whisk, tea scoop, the container for the powdered green tea. And finally, when everything's in, he starts moving the implements in front of the fire. So imagine here is the brazier I'm sitting in front of, in order to purify them. All the time that the host does anything in the tea room, he does it with exquisite mindfulness. If you don't, you make mistakes. And there's nothing worse than in the middle of a tea ceremony thinking, oh no, that shouldn't be there, it should be over there, because now I can't do this or I can't do that. But also it creates an atmosphere. If the host is really mindful, it really permeates into the guests. And so the host begins to purify the tea container and the tea scoop. So he has a special cloth that he carries actually in his belt. And he folds it carefully. And then he purifies the tea container. Next, the tea scoop. And this is actually my favorite part of the tea ceremony, because unlike today, where I'm talking, nobody talks. And so there's a real sense of stillness. And the host, if he's practiced, he or she, I'm going to say he, but I mean he or she. The host may just be focusing on his breathing. He's not thinking about, I have to wipe this or that. He's just focusing on his or her breathing. This is what my teacher tells me she does during tea ceremony. And sometimes the guests pick up on this and they start breathing along with the host. So now the bowl is ready to be filled with hot water, purified. There's a little cloth that the bowl will be in there, the part of the inside of the bowl will be wiped with. It's also a chance to have hot water in the bowl to warm the bowl. And finally, the host picks up the tea scoop again and says to the head guest, please help yourself to the tea suite. This tea is really quite bitter, and so instead of putting sugar in the tea, you put sugar in your mouth. And the tea suites are often gorgeous. There's stores in Kyoto that just sell tea sweets, and they're always seasonal. And if, here we can go to Wajimaya, or you can make your own tea sweets. And if you make your own tea sweets, again, you try and be seasonal. So, for instance, I like to make a tea sweet that has chestnuts in it, chestnuts and a little bit of Cointreau. And that's a great tea sweet for autumn or winter when chestnuts are harvested, but not for spring or summer. Spring or summer, I have to go to Wajimaya. Please help yourself to tea. Help yourself to your sweet. Two scoops. And then I'm going to get the excess tea off the tea scoop by striking it on the tea bowl. Again, the sound is of importance. So if I go, that's not good. If I go, wham, that's not good either. Just... The head guest excuses himself for going before, well, I present the bowl to the head guest. I turn it so the face of the bowl, this bowl doesn't look like it has a face, but many bowls do. They have, in fact, we can show you a bowl that does. Turns the face away from himself to the guest who's going to receive the bowl. And the bowl of tea is received by the guest, and then the guest turns it so he's drinking out of the back of the bowl, not the front of the bowl. And finally it gets returned to the host. When the guest has finished his bowl of tea, now he's really got nothing to do except ask questions. And this is how the guest shows his appreciation for the host, by asking questions about everything. Mm-hmm. Please tell me about the scroll. In, say, in February, it might say... one plum opens five petals, which is very appropriate for February because plum trees bloom in February. And so the guest might say, that's a wonderful scroll. I'm so appropriate for this season. And the host may say, yes, you know, when you talk in the tea room, you put your hands down like this. When you, you know, there's another line to that. It's a Zen saying. The other line is... one plum blossom opens five petals, and it's spring everywhere. And the guest says, well, what a wonderful sentiment. So you know, we all know that, you know, when plum opens, spring is about to come. And the host says, well, actually, there's a more profound meaning than that. It's that when one person comes to awakening, the entire universe awakens with him. Thank you so much for telling me. Who wrote the scroll? Oh, and the person who wrote it. Thank you for using that scroll, because I know that person, and it really, you know, warms my heart to see that scroll written by him. Once upon a time, I was in Japan, and I belonged to a school of tea called the Order Sankei, and there was another school of tea that was dominant in that part of Japan. And I went to a tea ceremony, and the host hung in the tokonoma a scroll written by a grandmaster of the Urusenkei tradition that dated back to the 18th century. So you can imagine how grateful I was. You know, he did this for me. You know, this is a treasure. And he hung it there for me. And so, of course, I tried to express my gratitude by, you know, telling him how wonderful it was, but asking questions about it. And how did you come by it? You know, has it been in your family forever? So try and draw him out about giving the details of the scroll. There is no doubt that being a guest at a tea ceremony makes you a much better guest at the dinner party. That picture there is really wonderful. Who did it? Where did you get it? Can you tell me the story of how you acquired it? Yeah. So what you're really doing as a guest is expressing gratitude, whether it's at a dinner party or at a tea ceremony, and it's a wonderful, warm exchange between the host and the guest. And it, as I say, it's not confined to tea ceremonies. If you go to somebody's house, try doing it. try saying, gee, this is really a delicious dish. I taste a little bit of tartness in it. Is there some, oh yes, you know, I just add like one teaspoonful of vinegar because it really brings out the flavor of. So it's that sort of thing that I think one learns from tea ceremony. So the acting as a head guest, in a sense, teaches one to overcome a little bit the separation between self and other. This is, of course, a goal we have in Zen. And if you're really interacting with the host, there's no longer the I'm the guest, he's the host. There's a kind of exchange where you forget who's the guest and who's the host. You just get lost in the exchange. Another way in which tea ceremonies like Zen is in the concentration, and I've already talked a little bit about that, and emptying one's mind. One knows that this is the only time this is ever going to happen, and so one approaches it that way. Would that we Zen students approached our lives that way every second, but of course we don't, because our heads are full of thoughts, and instead of saying this is, you know, my this moment is perfect, I need to pay attention to it. Well, now, what am I going to have for dinner? There is obviously a synergism, a way in which training in tea and training in Zen are reinforcing. I think, in fact, this is my personal opinion, I think that in terms of creating mindfulness practicing tea, mindfulness in motion, mindfulness in one's everyday, tea is actually superior to Zen. But Zen has a goal that's really different from just becoming mindful and becoming appreciative. It is, in fact, the highest goal of Zen. It's called Zen Buddhism for a reason, because the Buddha came to awakening, and through Zen, we strive to come to awakening. And this is not true in tea ceremony. Tea ceremony, people try to take their practice in the tea room out into their daily life and integrate their daily life and their tea practice, but there is not the desire to come to some sort of awakening. Most awakening, is people hear awakening and they think, oh, what, you mean like the Buddha? And the answer is, well, maybe not quite like the Buddha, because most awakenings, most initial awakenings are rather shallow. But they can be deepened. They can be deepened by continued zazen. They can also be deepened by paying attention to one's daily life and seeing that, as Master Hakuin says, what is there outside us? What is there we lack? Nirvana is openly shown to our eyes. This earth where we stand is the pure lotus land, and this very body, the body of Buddha. So a tea person would hear that and say, yeah, you know, that's right. This is all there is, just this tea ceremony. And taking that kind of attitude, one can, in fact, begin to expand what is usually a very, very small awakening to become a much larger awakening, so that hopefully someday we can echo Master Hakuin, one of the greatest of the Zen Buddhists in Japan, and say, what is there outside us? What is there we lack? Nirvana is openly shown to our eyes. This earth where we stand is the pure lotus land, and this very body, the body of Buddha. So, thank you all.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.